Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen over in Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good evening. How are you?
Fine, Mr. Allen, and good to, again, have you back in circulation here. A couple of people were saying that they really like it when we kind of open the phone lines and et cetera. We are on top of breaking stories here in the Twin Cities, and particularly Minneapolis. It started today, Don, with a press conference called by the chief of police, Jhené Harto, and her, by extension to her department, to announce the formation of a new division within the MPD to deal with the many issues of police-community relations, crime, if you will, the danger that the city faces, and et cetera, and working closely with community groups. Now, Don, this comes at a time when you and I have been hearing rumors that a very powerful group of leadership had come together and they had a plan to bring order and peace and safety and tranquility to our community. And, you know, I know we were both kind of waiting for what the announcement was supposed to be. I assume it will come at some point in time. But in the meanwhile, the MPD, who apparently, according to reliable sources, had been working on a plan for at least 18 months as of, you know, like 8 months ago, authorized and reviewed by the Department of Justice, State of Minnesota, et cetera, had put a plan in place to try to enhance the conditions and circumstances of safety for all citizens, if you will, and it includes a lot of factors, including the whole issue of mental health. You know, periodically, Don, on these programs, we talked about the mental health approach that people keep talking about, that the way
Absolutely.
To deal with the black community is lock them up, you know, give them medication and et cetera. So anyways, the department announced this afternoon that a new division has been created and that a Pacific individual by the name of Charles Adams II, a sergeant now promoted to commander of this special division, will be working closely with elements of the community to try to deal and to reduce the violence, the friction, and et cetera. And so we were able to ask for permission tonight on the Ron and Don program. If we would be able to speak with Commander Adams and talk a little bit about vision is, if you will, and how these many, many, many different groups that are out here who say that they are dealing with the safety in the streets, if you will, are going to be knitted, if you will, or incorporated into, quote-unquote, whatever plan it is that they have. Now, I do understand that by the end of this week that these community groups were going to be announcing, Don, that their plan was ready. They were going to unveil it. They were looking at seed money, a minimal amount of seed money of $250,000 right off the bat.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, there's been a lot of discussion over at the state capitol. In fact, I'm thinking in terms of maybe next week we may want to ask Senator Chamberlain if he would share with us some of the promises and commitments to solve the problem that have been articulated over at the Capitol to both Republican and Democratic leadership.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, two things here. You know, in the past, in the public health issue as it pertains to crime, You know, there have been academics and community people located right here in Minnesota that are national law enforcement figures that said that those two don't go together. But again, getting back with the song and dance, haven't we played this before with the same players that, you know, we're kind of alluding to?
Yes, we have. And I think it's one of the reasons that the MPD and the city of Minneapolis, under the leadership of Mayor Betsy Hodges and Council President Bart Johnson, decided that they wanted to finally start doing something that was meaningful and for real. One of the things that I have been fascinated about are the number of entities, groups, organizations, and et cetera, who are all saying that they're out here dealing with the problem and are expecting a piece of the money coming. And it's interesting because it appears that the entity or conduit that is being looked at and that will be looking at community is the Minneapolis Health Department. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm understanding that there was a request for a meeting with the MPD, and I guess some pressure was going to be applied for these organizations to be funded. By the way, anyone that wishes to challenge us on the authenticity of what we've just said, there is a document. It has been in circulation for the last 8 days that has the names of the individuals who were requesting that they be funded to deal with the violence here in the city. That document was delivered to a member of the city council. So just want to tell people, be kind of careful now if you say that we are making some misrepresentations. But if we are ready, I do think that Commander Adams has joined us, and if he has, we'd like to bring him on and talk to him a little bit about what he sees and what the city sees and what the MPD sees for dealing with these serious and very dangerous and heartbreaking problems out here.
Yes, Mr. Edwards, Commander Adams is on. Go ahead.
Commander Adams, R. Edwards, and with my colleague, Mr. Don Allen, want to thank you and want to thank the department, Chief Harto, Assistant Chief Arneson, for allowing some discussion. We were appraised and did see the press conferences that were held this afternoon, I believe. First of all, welcome, and can you give us some kind of idea of what and how is this new division that has been introduced by Chief Harto and the mayor and the city council, what is it, how is it shaped, and what is the expectation?
Well, first of all, thank both of you for having me on the show tonight. I appreciate it. My first time. to go back to your question, Mr. Edwards, the Division of Community and Collaborative Advancement, they call it CCA. Basically, you know, we have been doing so much community-wise. You know, we have our MPD community engagement team. We have our police community support team that you're well aware of, Mr. Edwards, because you're a member of that. We got the Cedar Riverside West Bank Center. That they basically deal with all the East African issues over in the Cedar Riverside area. Then we also have our, we have some other things like our Art Knight runs this, Lieutenant Knight runs implicit bias course for our department, and actually they branched out and starting to train other departments in doing it. So we had so many things going on, and one of the things the chief wanted to do is kind of bring all that stuff under one umbrella, because when you had these different things going on, you kind of lose focus on what's going on, and you have one of the groups doing this thing, the other group's doing that thing. So she decided she wanted to bring it under one umbrella, and that's where we are today with this community collaborative.
If I could, sir, and I know later on my colleague, Mr. Allen, will have some questions. Is this a part of the 18-month effort under the leadership of Assistant Chief Chris Arneson, if I'm not mistaken, was involved in, where community members and law enforcement and other professionals and et cetera were brought together and worked for 18 months, as I understand it, to put together a plan, which ultimately led to the governor, Mark Dayton, appointing a group under the auspices and leadership of District Court Judge Pam Alexander, which they are supposed to have made a report back on February 1st. I didn't see any existence of it, but I'm aware that the MPD had a 90-minute presentation with Judge Alexander's group about 2 to 3 weeks ago. Were you a part of that, sir, or are you at liberty to discuss it?
Well, no, I wasn't a part of that, but, you know, Assistant Chief Arneson, you're correct. She was very involved with that, you know, and she, you know, the Office of Justice Programs, they did that diagnostic review, and basically a lot of different issues came up through that with the subcommittees. So we have a lot of issues coming up with that. And a lot of the stuff, you know, people wanted more engagement with the police officers. PAL was an issue. Recruitment.
Could you explain for our national listening audience what PAL is? I mean, what is the full name of PAL?
Our Police Athletic League. You know, that's where our officers engage with young people, getting involved in football, wrestling, baseball, just various different sports. They have a summer camp, fitness academy that's put on out at our center. So, you know, a lot of those issues came up with the committee, you know. The gauge, like I said, engagement with officers. We looked at the complaint process, making it more, you know, accessible to people who want to make complaints, going online, making complaints, coming down in person, making complaints. We work closely with the Office of Police Conduct Review, which is ran by Director Jafar, who's a civilian. So they basically streamlined that process, you know. So a lot of the stuff that the subcommittees were asking for, we were already doing as a police department. And so we can tweak that a little bit to enhance a lot of that stuff, too, for some of the recommendations.
Now, how will you, if I could, how will you be introducing both the design and the mission of the MPD relevant to your entity, your new division? Because I know some media people were saying earlier today that there could be a problem, that there are activists and et cetera on the streets of Minneapolis. And some of this I know that you understand, Commander, goes back to the occupation of P4, that there could be a problem and et cetera. Are you comfortable and have you been given the latitude to fully engage the community with both information and thought processing?
Well, that's my job, Ron. You know, that's why the chief and the assistant chief, you know, trust me with this position. I mean, they know I'm the type of person. I mean, if there's somebody who's not happy with what we're doing and some of these initiatives that we're doing, you know, then that's fine. But I got a whole lot of community people who, a lot of these initiatives came from them. This is a community-driven, basically, division. This was created by community. A lot of the things that we're doing is based on what, like I said, the subcommittees, our, you know, community response teams. These are ideas that they came up with. So, you know,
and these were community groups. If I could, Commander, I don't mean to step in, but these were community groups. These were community people. These were people who are involved with their own kinds of programs and et cetera. I mean, this is not something that was made up in the boardroom at one of the foundations, right? I mean, I have to put it like that.
No, not at all. This was most definitely community-driven. I mean, we have people from organizations. We have people who just lived in the community was part of this process. So it wasn't just one group that came up with this. It was a variety of different people that came up. See, the chief also has an advisory committee made up of people from the community. So, like I said, we had so many different groups involved with police policy and stuff like that, giving us ideas on what we need to do to kind of better our relationships with community. So, I mean, this is a community-driven process.
All right. But let me ask you this question, because I know that it has kind of come up. I noticed the major television station this evening kind of identifying your own legacy. Could you just give us a little background on yourself? I mean, I know the question comes up from a lot of the millennials, that there are folks out here who really don't live in the community, don't know the community and such. Could you give us just a little background, particularly for our domestic and international audience, what is the background of Commander Charles Adams II?
Well, I was raised in North Minneapolis. I was raised in the projects of North Minneapolis. As a matter of fact, the address was 810 Emerson Avenue North.
okay.
I never forget that address. Went to Minneapolis North High School, graduated from there. I did some of my law enforcement degree training at Golden Valley Lutheran College in Golden Valley, and I also played football there. When I left Golden Valley, I was eligible to be a police officer. I went into the academy, got hired by the Minneapolis Police Department in 1986, and I worked in various units. I worked patrol in the 5th Precinct. Myself and assistant chief at the time, Arneson, was my partner, and we were the first officers in this city to ever do, well, in the state, to do a community-oriented policing program, and we did that in the Northside Projects because I wanted to give back to where I came from. And at that time, when we went back, it was highly infested with narcotics and all kinds of violence, and we went and cleaned that place up in within a year. And a lot of that came from cooperation from community people. People watched me grow up in the projects who had no problem telling me what was going on. After I left that, I actually did recruitment for the police department. I recruited the largest class of people of color. I had 21 people of color in my first class. In my next class, I had 16 people of color that you knew they were of color. So I was successful in recruitment. Eventually ended up going to Mayor Sharon Sells Belton's office as her director of security / driver / bodyguard. Worked for her for both of her terms for 8 years in her office. And I learned a lot about community also from her. So, you know, after I got promoted in 2000 and went into juvenile, I was a juvenile investigator. From juvenile, went to property crimes, investigated in property crimes, which is burglaries and in the neighborhood crimes, basically. Left property crimes and went and had a pretty long stint in homicide. Left homicide, went to the streets as a supervisor in downtown Minneapolis. Was there for about 4 years, went back to homicide, and now left homicide after probably 2.5 years, went to internal affairs, and I was an internal affairs investigator for about 1.5 years. Now I'm promoted to a commander.
Okay. I want to get my associate, Mr. Allen, in, but I want to ask you one additional question because I had taken note of it when I was listening to, I think it was Reggie Chapman of WCCO, who interviewed you and was at the press conference. There is a certain international flavor to this new division and your command responsibilities because you'll be working closely with the Somali and Muslim community. Am I correct or am I incorrect?
No, you're correct. I kind of escaped that when I was on patrol. We started a project over in Cedar Riverside area with two Somali beat officers, and we had some problems over there, high crime area. A lot of officers who didn't want to work over there because they didn't want to deal with the community. So these two officers came to me, and at that time, Assistant Chief Artisan was the inspector of the precinct. I took the ideal to her. They went over there, and they were very successful working in their own community, and one even lived in the Cedar Riverside Plaza Towers at the time he was working over there. And they were successful in reducing crime down to almost zero, especially violent crime. Our community loved it. They were able to communicate with the officers. Then we started bringing other officers into the community, and then we started a program. It was basically a study we started with the police executive research firm, PERF, Chuck Wexler out of D.C.
Oh,
and that
yes,
program,
yes, Chuck Wexler out of Washington, D.C. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Chuck has been here a couple of times. I had the pleasure of, you know, being in a meeting with him, standing in a room with him. But let me do this at this time. Mr. Allen, my associate, Mr. Allen, do you have any questions, any observations for Commander Adams?
Because we don't want to keep him.
It's been a busy day. Go right ahead, Don.
Yeah, I understand. And I don't want to keep him either. And so I just like to chime in and say I don't think there's anything that I could say that Commander Adams doesn't already know. But the one question I like to pose, because we have a lot of listeners right now on this broadcast, is, you know, North Minneapolis is an area with over 240 nonprofits that say they give everything out from shoestrings to bus tokens. And in some cases, we know that is not correct, as seen by the last 30 years in that community. how will this process, this sounding successful process, be able to sift through the weeds to get those stars in that nonprofit sector out and let them shine and change the community as it pertains to, you know, a reduction in crime, youth violence, and black-on-black crime?
Well, you know, be honest with you, Don, I don't really know how the, nonprofits operate in that area. I see the area, you know, like I said, my father still lives in the area. I coach high school football at Minneapolis North, all right? So mm-hmm. I see my kids mm-hmm. coming to school every day. You know, majority of them are hungry. I mean, you know, the little money that we even get for coaching, you know, goes back into food, clothing. I got kids showing up to practice without an undershirt up under their shoulder pads, which, you know, if you played football, you know, your shoulder pads are cut into your skin. I mean, we have a lot of those issues. You know, most of our kids are on, free or reduced lunch, you know. So, I mean, we're dealing as a community, as coaches, we have to deal with those issues with our own kids. I mean, when it comes, there's groups that take care of us. I mean, you Councilmember Blong Yang has been great. I mean, he feeds mm-hmm. our kids. After we won the state championship, he actually fed the community. And he went and solicited funds from, like, actually the Police Federation and some different businesses around. Businesses have basically been there for us, you know, like the McDonald's up on Broadway. They've been there for us, helping us feed our kids. A lot of cops that I work with would bring in oranges and cookies and apples and peanuts and stuff like that. I mean, that's how we were able to feed our kids. I don't know of any nonprofits. I mean, you know, and I don't want to say they haven't done anything for us over there, but I'm not aware of anything. I guess you got to talk to the big coach, OA, about that. But, I mean, you know, but for my job, my position, my job is, you know, basically just making sure that everything that community was looking for the police department to do, I have to make sure that's getting done. And, you know, and like I've told Mr. Edwards before, you know, a lot of people think just because we work for the city of Minneapolis, we're the police department, we have that. We're also the U.S. bank. And we don't have money like that to give away to people. Because if that was the case, my brother would not be working hard as he is working to fundraise for PAL. You know?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, just why would clarify, we Commander, your brother, who is also, is he now a 25-year veteran?
Yes, he is.
He is the director of the Police Athletic League, correct?
Well, he's a part of the Police Athletic League, but in his mind, he thinks he's the director. So,
that's why I said that. But Tony Adams, who was also a All-City, All-State basketball player for North, man, that's your whole North family, because the head football coach at Minneapolis North is your son. Are we correct?
Yes, he is.
Yes, I mean, I want to make sure that folks, because folks, some folks try to make you think they know everything that's going on. It's hard to explain to them. And you have a daughter who is also a police cadet. Is that correct?
Yeah, my daughter Brittany is a community service officer. So what that is, she's basically she's in uniform, but they don't carry a weapon. But she's going through her training. Right now, she's finished graduated from college because you have to have a 2-year degree to be a law enforcement officer here in the state of Minnesota. So now she's on her next portion, is which we call the skills. It's kind of like the state police academy where she goes get certified.
All right.
So she's in that process right now, but she works daily with the police department, and she takes things over to the, you know, over to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension for evidence itself to be processed. They have squads to go watch. And it's actually that community service officer program is a great tool for us to recruit females and people of color.
Right. Could I ask this question? I want to go back to my associate, Mr. Allen, because I kind of cut him off because I think he raised a heck of an inquiry about what our nonprofits are doing. We have so many nonprofits with so many programs, and I've seen them in so many meetings talking in terms of what it is that they are doing. And et cetera. Does the city of St. Paul or does any other municipality in the state of Minnesota, and the only other two, I mean, they're even close to comparable size would be Duluth and Rochester, does St. Paul, Duluth, or Rochester have anything like what been unveiled by the department under the leadership of Chief Janae Harto?
No, Ron, they don't have anything like this. I mean, they'll have engagement officers. They do have that. But I don't think they have, like, a community support team, you know. I think we're kind of one of the first in the nation to have something like that, where you have community people respond to critical incidents or briefed about critical incidents when they occur. I don't think anybody in the country is receiving texts from their police department saying, we just had this situation happen here. Here's some of the details that we can talk to you about. I just don't think that happened. When we formed this team last year, you know, we had a lot of young officers up who weren't used to seeing civilians show up. But they were so happy by the third incident that happened, because a lot of the civilians that showed up, community folks, they were actually able to manage the crowd, build some trust there. The officers were able to do their job. There was no confrontations. If a confrontation broke out, they were, you know, the community folks were able to step in and assist. Okay. So, I mean, it worked wonderful. I heard from cops. They loved it. I know there's relationships forming out there with some of the younger cops. And they just, when a situation, we get a major situation like that, the first thing they're looking for is when the community folks are showing up.
Right. Well, now, Mr. Allen, when you and I assume that this is leadership that is being provided by all the nonprofits that are out here?
Yeah, and that's what troubles me, Commander Adams. I'm a school teacher, 7th and 8th graders that have been kicked out of more than 2 schools in a particular district here in the state. And I understand the homeless, the coming in hungry in the morning, family issues. And it just shocks me that, I mean, Mr. Edwards and I have been looking at this whole nonprofit picture, and you've said out of your mouth that the businesses and the councilmen, a couple other folks get together and help take care of your activities or complement your activities. And I applaud that. But then again, I'm looking at these agencies that are filing these reports with the state, the county, and the city, and saying they're doing the things you're talking about, yet we don't see them. So that's what troubles me, and that's kind of what I'm on usually. Just kind of watching that from afar at this point. But, again, I applaud your effort. I think this should be a good engagement with the community, a problem-solving engagement, and I look forward to finding out and seeing and reading more. By the way, Star Tribune did post a story at 6:29 p.m. tonight with your picture in it online. So that probably will be in the paper tomorrow. So just want to let you know.
Okay. Oh, yeah, appreciate that. Yeah.
All right. Commander, I want to thank you on behalf of Mr. Allen and myself, and for your department chief, Harto, Assistant Chief Arneson, who I understand is retiring at the end of May after 31 distinguishable years. You have 31 years in also, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Chris actually has 32 because she started at Savage a year before she came on Minneapolis, but we both came on together as in the same class. I'm higher ranked than her because I was hired before. So I always used to, when you were in a squad car, you used to have a car captain. So I was car captain, but she actually shot past me and became assistant chief. So, I can't use the car captain deal on her anymore. But
well,
yeah,
she's been godsend in many regards.
Right,
I know that.
Right. And
some people wouldn't want that to be said, but I've watched her, and she has been most effective and has been a tremendous asset to the chief of the department. As the chief of the department has been a tremendous asset to the mayor of the city. Commander, I want to thank you for taking time. You've been with us actually almost an hour, and we appreciate your family letting you give us that amount of time. Particularly today has been a very, very interesting day. Do you have any final thought that you would like to leave with your community and with our listening audience?
You know, the thing is, Ron, like I said, the chief and assistant chief, they're totally into this. They're for this program, and it ain't just because she put me in charge of this program. And most people know me, I don't roll that way. You know, if something's wrong, I'm going to say something wrong, and I'm not going to be involved in it. But she totally believes in this program, and I think it's going to be good for us to have dialogue and make some things happen. I think this is a good thing for our community.
All right. Commander, I want to thank you once again and thank your family and your lovely wife and, of course, what can I say, your brother, your son, your daughter, et cetera, committed to public safety. Thank you again, sir, and we'll hopefully be in contact with you over the number of coming months.
All right, thank you. Thank both of y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye. Well, Mr. Allen, you asked a rather interesting question. I was trying to stay away from it on the nonprofits because you and I have heard a lot of nonprofits tell us about what a wonderful job they're doing out here dealing with the problems and particularly violence and public safety and et cetera. In fact, there was a meeting at UROC yesterday in which there was only about 16 people were there, but they were talking in terms of the things that they were doing and the command that they had of the issues, the problems, the dangers. I reinforce that word again, the dangers that besiege our community, both north and south. We have to remember that Minneapolis is a city of both north side, south side, northeast, southeast. You know what I mean? Sometimes we just kind of get hooked up in North Minneapolis, but we didn't give the number. The phone line is open if anyone has any question. My understanding as I look at my board is that we got a lot of people in the chat room.
yeah, quite a few. That call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that calling number is 347-426-3904. And before we go to the phone lines, Mr. Air, well, actually, let's just go to the phone lines because we do have a caller. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Gentlemen, greetings.
Yes, sir. Greetings.
It's Ms. Graham, right? Yes, Ms. Graham. How are you doing,
sir?
Good.
Listening to your program.
Say, by the way, I just want to cut right in and congratulate you and others in our Southside community for the wonderful job and the pressure that you brought to bear that has brought about recognition of a legacy, if you will, of the Lee home. Minneapolis Star Tribune on the front page below the fold talks in terms of preserving city's racial history at Lee House. That was a place in, 1931 that was besieged by white mobs who wanted to African-Americans from living anywhere south of 38th. And I know that you, as I understand it, without going into everything, or a part of a group of senior African-Americans who really pushed for that. And I just wanted to commend you over the air, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, that was a necessary, it's just kind of a sad saga, you know, in our history, you know, the United States, the Twin Cities, especially right here, you know, right there on 46th Street, you know, it's a mob, you know, pitchforks and torches to try to get these people and terrorize people, hardworking people that were just trying to live. But there were barriers. And there's a whole issue with the whole redlining and the whole, I mean, this is all over the country. But that particular incident, I think, was really, you know, the Lee family, a hardworking, you know, group of people that worked their way up to a status where they could get themselves a home and then, had to put up with all the terror just because certain people didn't want them to be their neighbors. So, yeah.
And I understand that actually we owe it to a Latino Hispanic friend of ours who actually made this a story to be looked at, I think it was about 3 years ago, Joe, the Mexican restaurant out there on Chicago.
Sure.
And I remember he put a little money out and passed out information and et cetera. And then I started hearing about some of my older friends out there. Pressing ahead, and lo and behold, it has been designated a federal historical site. And so, I, without going into additional detail, I know that you were a part of a group of African Americans that worked to get that done. It kind of goes back to what Mr. Allen said about nonprofits. But anyways, you had called in. You have some comments, observations?
Well, yeah, I really enjoyed the officer, you know, community officer. I mean, I think that's something that's really, really needed. But it also, you know, kind of juxtaposed into what Mr. Allen was saying about specifically on the north side and the nonprofits. And, you know, it seems like, you know, I retired years ago from Hennepin Child Protection. I'll just lay that out there. And I was the most senior supervisor in child protection there. Mm-hmm. And I recall, you know, officers being called and going into homes. And, you know, the reality is sometimes, you know, your skill level, you know, you walk into a home, you don't know what you're walking into. You're going to be walking into a situation of drugs, domestic abuse, mental illness. And so they're asking nearly a lot of officers.
Yes.
And I think people don't really look at the other side of that, you know, from time to time. But what I saw from the vantage point of social services and child protection is that so many of these community services are really, they overlap. I mean, your police department, department, your child protection, your social services, and your schools. I mean, because these things, it's so important. One of the main things I would see with some of the kids is, the first thing is they're not going to school. First thing is, or they're moving around so much, they're changing so much, they don't have a clear academic focus. What grade are they at? You know, have they completed enough grade, you know, and if they're being moved back.
Acquired enough credits. I see where you're going. Mr. Allen, could you just tune in on that with us, if you would, because that's the discussion I've been hearing, is that there are far too many African-American students who, because of the transit, if you will, and et cetera, that they really don't even have enough credits. The district is just making money off of them. Could you just enlighten us a little bit on that?
Well, here's what happens. You have students that are being displaced in several school districts, not just in the inner city, but around the surrounding suburbs, especially students of colors, that are forced into taking night school, that are forced into doing extra summer school simply because they can't cut the curriculum. And one of the factors is that when No Child Left Behind got kind of changed a little bit and the funding went to these other agencies, the folks that got the money ran out to the suburbs.
Okay.
And so what has happened is, the children in our community are, you might have 19 in the math class and only two might pass. And so they've lost that math credit, which sets them back. You know, when they need 19, mm-hmm. they're only going to get six. Mm-hmm. And so that becomes a huge problem. And that's going on, you know, from the point, and I'm glad Mr. M called, because one of the other things, I didn't want to get into this, Mr. Edwards and Mr. M with Commander Adams, but seeing far too many children riding the 12, 13, 14 to 16, riding the light rail all night, getting off to go to school in the morning to eat breakfast.
This is
overwhelming. This is ridiculous. If North Minneapolis and St. Paul has at least 100, 200 nonprofits concentrated in one area, and they're not managing their money to the point of, Mr. Edwards, you would know this, back in the day when nonprofits had a lot of money, they'd buy up real estate to keep them fluid, just in case they need to sell a house and put some money back into the nonprofit, you know. If we're not doing that now, that becomes a huge problem, because it's sickening. I can't even get upset. I didn't know what was going on, and someone pulled my coattail and said, they rode the light rail all night. Ms. Harris, I make sure that I have plenty of donuts, orange juice, lemonade, bubbly water in my cabinet, because they'll come in. They know that I'm a source now for some morning food, and you know, and a place to sit down and chill out in front of the heater. But this is crazy. This is just crazy. And the credit thing you cannot function as a student if you're homeless. You have family problems. You're riding a light rail all night, and you come to school hungry, period.
Right. And then we have the whole issue, particularly for young ladies, we have the whole issue of hygiene, right, gentlemen?
Yeah, that's huge. Mr. Edwards, we do have a caller on hold.
All right. Let's ask our caller in. Caller, what can we
caller,
do? What
caller,
we
you're live on. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys tonight?
Oh, wonderful. How are you, sir?
Real good.
Good. I think you guys are bringing up some fundamental points, pivotal points that is obviously missed when we talk about educating our kids. And I think that research has shown that when a child comes to school hungry, he or she can't concentrate. So if our children are coming hungry and things of that nature, good thing they have teachers like you, Don, because that child tends to act out because he or she is embarrassed because of their home life, what's going on in the home. If, like you said, Don, they're homeless and they're riding the light rail all night and haven't had any sleep, they're sleep deprived. So, of course, naturally, they would have an attitude with a teacher that says something that they deem saying something wrong to them. But then the problem is we start deeming these kids as IEP. And then all of a sudden that kid becomes now a statistic that now gets more money for the state. And then the state now gives this money supposedly to these schools and to programs that are supposed to help these children, but are not helping our minority children. Because once these kids are deemed IEP, I'm not sure they are now swept under the carpet and now into the system. And
let
are not just numbers.
Mr. Nelson, I appreciate you certainly calling because we're reflecting back. I'm reflecting back. I can only speak for myself. Reflecting back to the interview with Commander Adams and one of the things he said about the football team. By the way, a state championship football team at Minneapolis North this past season. But, you know, gentlemen, he talked in terms of the condition of some of these young men and the fact, and I know this to be true, that the coaches and others have bought clothing and food and et cetera. But here's the thing. I'm hearing about all of these folks that are over at the state capitol and talking in terms of the things that they're doing and the issues that they're bringing up and et cetera. And I have to tell you, one can't read or absorb everything, so I'll ask all of you that are on with us right now, have we seen anything in print about the condition of young students of color as it pertains to riding the light rail, being subject to the kind of quote-unquote denial that they're in? Has any nonprofit had a conference during the school year, gentlemen? Can any of you tell me if any of our nonprofits have had a town hall meeting? Has the congressman from our 5th Congressional District, has he had a town hall meeting? Because what Mr. Allen and Commander Adams and the question posed by him and now the statement by you, Mr. Nelson, that's frightening, man. We should be concerned. But, Ms. Nelson, you used a reference which I hear a lot, and that is when people of any age group or any, you know, gender or et cetera become embarrassed and humiliated by their admissions,
right.
And that drives anger. So I'm asking the question again. Did I miss things? Was there some town hall meetings about the problem that these young people are going through, gentlemen?
No, not that I know of. Maybe I guess I should ask the same thing, Don. Anyone else? Maybe I've been blind and I don't get everything, but I haven't heard.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Allen, you're an educator. You're dealing with young people who are now on their third, fourth leg, if you will, staying in public education. Has there been any meetings, St. Paul, Minneapolis? Did we miss something over the last
of
weeks?
You haven't missed anything because what's happening here is that there's two things that aren't talked about, and that is homeless students and race. Okay, that's you will not hear those things talked about at all. What you will hear is the girl wanting to use the boy's bathroom or the boy wanting to use the girl bathroom. You hear about that? I mean, I think that every guy created everybody equal, and if you want to use whatever bathroom, let's just take the labels off the door and make it communal, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing is, those things seem to go to the top of the cream rather than, okay, let's solve these problems. You know, Toni Morrison said where there's severe violence against black people, the schools in the city are implicit in that dealing. I'm paraphrasing her. That's not exactly what she said, but it was really close. And so with that said, you know, you wonder you know, how do we create a new deal for urban families? How do we get these kids to the point where they understand that a black teacher in front of them is not their enemy, but someone that can give them stories so they avoid the things that we ran into? You know, if I didn't listen to my elders, I would have been really screwed up. I mean, not that I hadn't been screwed up. I was. But the thing is, real quick, just let me finish this real quick. I'm almost done. I know Jamar's used to me talking. Anyway, the thing is, you know, I experienced something that was very disheartening a few days back. A Somali told me, you know, out of nowhere, I am better than you, and then went to cuss me out. Okay?
Wow. Wow.
And I'm seventh grader. And I was
shocked. Oh, this is a student you're saying. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And just a random student. And I didn't understand. I didn't know how to – I didn't know – I'm just looking. I'm like, okay, you're better. I'll let that go in one ear out the other. But, but yeah, I mean, this crazy stuff is going on, and it needs to be addressed. I don't know – I do know how to address it, but getting to the right people is going to be an uphill battle.
Yes. Well, let's do this, Mr. Nelson. Appreciate you calling. Mr. Allen, do we have any other calls holding at this point?
No, because, not at this time. Not at this time.
Okay. Mr. Nelson, any additional observations or concerns that you have? You raised a heck of a question, and I certainly concur. I just think that what is very profound is your statement about no one is taking into consideration the humiliation and the hurt, the pain that these young people through. Anything else about Mr. Nelson?
Well, I think that Mr. Edwards, it's because, again, they, our kids are marked and looked at as statistics when they lash out, because they're deemed they have a behavior problem. And again, so now they're looked at, again, we're going to put this kid now, this student now is an IEP student. This student has a behavior issue. So we're no longer going to look at now because this kid has a behavior problem. There's something wrong with him, you know.
Okay. It's not, in other words, he or she is not salvageable. They can't be salvageable.
Exactly. Right? So we need educators like Don. Hey, you know what, Don? You, back to a point that you made real quick. The problem, too, is the parents, and we've talked about it, the three of us have talked about it before on this show. The parents are younger and younger, and I don't know if they're instilling respect into these young kids anymore, okay? And so you say you didn't know what to say when that young man cussed you out? If you had to say the wrong thing, you better had your gun in hand because you might have had to fight the young man. And that's sad, but it's the honest to God truth. And the thing about it is we have to start having real, honest dialogue about what's going on. And the issue is, as our leaders have to be able to, instead of having a hand out for money, have their arms out to caress and hold our children and come up with more issues and plans and ideals to eradicate some of this crap.
In other words, embrace them with love as opposed to greed.
That's right. There it is.
All right. Thank you, Brother Nelson. Thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank
all
you,
right.
sir.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
Yes, sir. Still with us, him.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, okay. Let me jump, gentlemen, and I maybe should have even asked the question also, Mr. Nelson, but we may get a phone call. Tell me what, you know, Mr. Allen, we're going to 9:30, right? Central Standard Time.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. In the last 12 minutes, tell me, gentlemen, what y'all thought about the President's State of the Union address.
Oh, he killed it. He killed it. He was being president.
Well, you know, he killed it all right. I mean, he really, you know, put on a great acting show. You know, real good. I mean, with
I mean, no different than what President Obama
bringing
did.
Additional. Well, you know, it's. I guess the one thing that I thought it really lacked was sincerity. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, or maybe it's just. You know, I mean, he's not my candidate, so, you know, I mean, but I didn't detect any real sincerity. You know, I detected a real planned type of orchestrated type of a thing that just didn't seem to be sincere or real from the heart. I mean, he didn't seem to say the things that he said up until this point were totally diametrically opposed to what he said last night.
Right.
So how many of you buy into what he said?
Don answer this question also. I found it interesting. Were you concerned that he never mentioned Russia or Putin?
No. Why would he mention Russia or Putin? I don't understand that reference, because he's talking to the American people.
Because of the election issue.
He's already president. That's a done deal. Can't go backwards anymore. Folks like Van Jones, who is a longtime critic, and he's the Green Czar under President Obama, went public on YouTube and different news agencies and said that, this is Van Jones, and I quote, he became the president of the United States in that moment. And now Van Jones, who we know
is a liberal. Timing is always good.
That's what we say. When Van Jones, one of the most serious academic black men that worked with President Obama throughout his tenure at the White House, if Van Jones, any black person that supports this president, is a Tom, is a coon, is a sellout.
It's like
their whole makeup has changed.
It's like Don King.
Go ahead.
Okay, it's like Don King. Don King comes into the ring with one guy, and that guy loses, he leaves with the other guy. Okay?
That's business.
He didn't care if the guy's white or Asian or whatever. That guy wants, I'm going with him. I mean, that's all that was.
Let me just say, Don, the reason I asked the question about, wasn't it kind of disturbing that the president never said anything about Russia, Putin, or et cetera, because irrespective of what we all may say, is that the president's got a problem. And the reason I said that, gentlemen, as we were preparing to go on the air, breaking news all across the country and all the major networks, is that the White House has been ordered by the intelligence committees of both the Senate and the House of Representatives not to destroy a single document, a single email, and et cetera, as it pertains to what really happened. And that is almost unprecedented. We haven't seen that since Watergate. And that was the reason I asked the question.
Hillary Clinton. Okay, we're having a little bit of amnesia here, and it's been dying stuff.
Hillary Clinton is not the president. Hillary Clinton. Richard Nixon is the president. Let's be for real. We're talking about a president, a sitting president, being told by the Congress of the United States, don't destroy, don't touch anything. And the reason is, it appears that, now, Don, I know you're not an Obama man, but it appears that President Obama set President Trump up by maintaining a vast archives of documentation as it pertains to the relationship with the Russians. But, hey, if no one sees any problem with it, you know, only time will tell.
Mm-hmm. We can always depend on
Rachel Maddow. Oh, my God, we're down to the last. Now, Don, how much do you think is coming into the African-American community through the infrastructure plan, almost $1 trillion? What do you think the blacks will get?
You hear locally here or the United States in general?
Both. But we got enough time.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say at this point, because there hasn't, even with the deal with the historically black colleges and universities, that deal is basically a talking deal. There's been no dollar amount put to it, but other than that, there's been focus to take care of them for their lifetimes, basically. So unless we do something locally here, as far as reaching out and getting some of them dollars in, I can't even speculate on what kind of money is coming in the black community. I mean, Mr. Edwards, we have huge challenges, especially here in the Twin Cities, where you have a black agency, state agency, like the Council for Minnesota's on African Heritage, you know, having dance parties on Thursday nights at a club on the Green Line.
I forgot that they were still around.
I'd like to ask one question about, you know, again, with the nonprofits. I mean, aren't they supposed to have a mission? I mean, isn't each of these nonprofits to have a specific thing that they're addressing? I mean, if school, I mean, education issues, homelessness for children, you know, protection issues, housing. I mean, aren't they...
All of
I mean,
that is
shouldn't
on
they
point,
have
sir.
Missions
you're
that
on
they
point.
Get to do
yeah.
something?
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
don't,
we
have a, but see, don't we have a nonprofit council, state of Minnesota nonprofit council? By the way, I was asked to also do this because all of us have resided on the South Side, et cetera. I was distressed to hear that Cindy Booker, the very excellent exec director of Sabathany, is a target to be forced out by basically an all-white board.
I heard that.
On yes,
I did
yes,
hear.
Cindy Booker has been, yes,
yeah.
yes. They, in fact, they had a closed meeting, I think it was this past Monday, in which she was not invited, and she was told by the board president who commutes between here and Atlanta, where he works for Coca-Cola, they would make all decisions, and apparently that she should stand prepared to exit. And the word is,
wow.
is that the facility will be turned over to a Hispanic Latino corporation.
Oh, of course. Oh my! This is
Hey, Mr. Edwards, since we're doing this, I have to get this in on our show because people is ducking and hiding about this. As much as I like that particular club that I mentioned over on the Green Line, there is a YouTube video going viral and a story that was published in the St. Paul Pioneer Press where at that club they had a women's face-smacking contest which led to an altercation in the parking lot that led to the close with a 10-day closure and $2,000 suspension. This video on YouTube, has already had 11,000 views, Mr. Edwards, and it's really a shame because people already look, the mainstream look at some of us like animals anyway. And if you look at these two beautiful black sisters slapping each other in the face in the club, I mean, not playing. It's a smack fest at this particular club on the Green Line. It's got a DJ in the middle with a microphone like a referee. You should just see it. It's totally, utterly shameful.
That is terrible.
Yeah.
That is absolutely terrible. One other piece in that we're doing this, M and Mr. Allen, be advised that the Minneapolis Art Institute, we know what a pristine organization that is, are putting in new security plans and curtailing the entrance of certain kinds of people after a massive gang fight on the third floor of the Minneapolis Art Institute on Friday evening. Now, you want to talk in terms of stepping on the toes of the enlightened community, if you will. Yes, they did. Apparently, neo-Nazis, now, you know, we're not supposed to have any, and you have just a couple minutes left, Mr. Allen, I know. Neo-Nazis came in and attacked a group of millenniums and maybe even Black Lives Matter and et cetera, and they fought all over the third floor and on down to the second floor of our beautiful, beloved Minneapolis Art Institute. Gentlemen,
well,
I just don't know what the city is coming
to. Current president, so I think this is, you know.
Right. Don, I have to tell you, I agree with him. I thought that was an excellent Hollywood production. By the way, gentlemen, we got to do this. Kudos to our three African-American, four altogether, artists who won Academy Awards. Moonlight, the director and writer, and Fences, if you will, and Moonlight for, well, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, and Best Picture. Man, that was the first for Hollywood. Okay? We're obligated to say that. It's just beautiful. But, hey, Brother M, thank you, and we look to see you and hopefully back with us. And we're talking about the future of Minneapolis. Mr. Allen, bring whoever, bring him home.
Jay Brown.